Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest this morning is Kathleen Williams. She's an attorney, a registered nurse, a single mom, and an author. Kathleen and I will be discussing her new book titled Single Mom, the New Father. Her book is about her success in assuming a father's role in raising her son, Sean, without losing or compromising her own identity as a loving mother. Good morning, Kathleen. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great this morning, Johnny. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. I really enjoyed reading your wonderful book. Although it addresses a very serious issue, you have expertly laced the book with everyday living humor. Congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And congratulations to you on such a wonderful program. And thank you so much for having me on today. I'm really excited about today's show.
You're welcome. I look forward to talking with you today. You have some wonderful tips for everyone to use in any situation. But let us start out by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, sure. I'd be happy to. One of the things that is, I think has made such a big difference in my life is the fact that I spent much of my time growing up as a little girl with my father. I had him just always around, always in my life. My parents were married for over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I know it was phenomenal. They're both
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. It is fantastic. And something that we don't see that much anymore,
right.
Johnny, with the children, most of my son's friends and so forth, the majority of them are from single-parent households. And we just don't
mm-hmm.
see marriages
mm-hmm.
lasting over 50 years anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fortunate enough to have had that experience in my life. And I was always hanging out with my dad. That was really the thing. And my father and mom both are from Jamaica, West Indies. My father from Port Antonio, Jamaica, and they are both immigrants. One of the things that my dad did in Jamaica was he was a cricket player, if you are familiar with the sport cricket. And,
yes, I am, because I used to play cricket when I was in high school.
Did you really?
Yes,
oh
in
God.
Malaysia, yes.
That's phenomenal. That is phenomenal. It's so funny, because a lot of times I tell people that my dad played cricket, they're like, what? You know, what was that? But, yeah, he was a cricket player, and when he came to this country, he found there was no cricket at that time. Now, cricket is
right.
big in the United States now.
Right.
But at the time that he came, there was no, you know, cricket was not popular. So
right.
he was a self-taught tennis player. He
mm-hmm.
just, you know, he had to play a sport. He was very athletic, so he taught himself how to play the sport of tennis, and that's how he raised me. He raised me playing tennis. So from the time that I could walk and talk, I
mm-hmm.
had my own tennis racket, and whenever we had time, we were always on the tennis court. Even when we didn't have time, we would squeeze
mm-hmm.
tennis in. So that was one of the things I remember most about growing up. Every day we were out there, but not only that, my father was very involved in my activities, raising me, making decisions about what my sister and I would do as
mm-hmm.
youngsters. We were both musicians. I played cello,
mm-hmm.
I played piano. I went to the High School of Music and Art in New York. And I was also very politically active. I always ran for offices in schools and so forth and loved the arts, always went to the opera, things like that. But sports was very, very important in my life growing up. And, you know, that was one of the early childhood things that I remember. Then I did go
mm-hmm.
on to college,
mm-hmm.
Left here. That was one of the things that I was not so excited about when I first decided to go to college. I really wanted to stay in New York. And my mom, in particular, wanted me to go away to school.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I decided to do what she wanted me to do. She was a strong, proud Jamaican woman, and she was kind of forceful in her decision. She was kind of forceful about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wanted me to not only go to college, go away to school, and she wanted me to become a doctor, something I really was not interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, Johnny, I was not very confident or excited about going against her wishes. So because I was a pretty good student, I had great grades in math, I had great grades, I had good grades, period, I went ahead and decided to, you know, okay, well, being a doctor is not such a bad thing, you know, it's not a horrible thing. You know, and if I have the grades, if she thinks maybe I can become a doctor, maybe that's the thing to do, you know.
Right.
And I could tell you why, but I won't necessarily go into that unless we have time. But one of the things, I wanted to be a lawyer. I knew that from the time I was a kid. I may be dating myself by saying Perry Mason was my favorite TV show.
Uh-huh.
And in watching it, that was, you know, I watched him break those people down on the stand. I don't know if you're familiar with Perry Mason, but by the time
I saw that when I was growing up, I think. In black and white, actually, in Malaysia.
That's right. And by the time, Johnny, so you know, by the time he got to the end with the person on the witness stand, they were confessing to everything. I did it! I murdered him!
There you go, yeah.
So I that was what I wanted to do. But my mom had other sights. She, interestingly enough, didn't feel as though African Americans were successful in getting into law school and being able to have successful law practices at that time. So her feeling was you'll do better by going to medical school, a field that has already been broken into, if you will, by African Americans. So that was something she asked me to do. So anyway, I did do that, and I didn't do well in it at all. It was not a career that I enjoyed. I didn't enjoy the classes, you know, biochem, calculus, advanced biochemistry, and so forth. I didn't do well at all. I didn't apply myself, and I ended up getting kicked out of undergraduate school. My first university, they threw me out. For poor
that
academic.
Sounds to me like you were partying too much. It's got nothing to do
Yeah, I would have to agree there. I was involved with everything political on campus, everything.
There you go.
But, yeah, and I did do some partying too. I won't deny that. And I just did not apply myself and ended up having to leave there, which was kind of meant to be. It turned my life around, and I decided then to go into the various careers that I wanted to. So, you know, coming along, it was a very long process. As you can imagine, being kicked out of school with that on your academic record, it's not easy then to turn those things around.
Sure.
And, but I was able to, thank God. And I went into nursing first because that was one way that I could get out of college in less than 10 years. I had a lot of, you know, those courses that were applicable to the health field. So that's actually how I became a nurse. I worked in nursing for several years, and then after some years, after Sean was born, actually my son, I went back to law school. Mm-hmm. Somebody gave me a challenge and said, listen, you've been talking about law, because I never stopped talking about it. You've been talking about law all your life, every day, you know, put up or shut up. So I put up, and that's why I am a nurse attorney today.
Fantastic. Wonderful story. Beautiful story, actually. You've done so much in your life, and people don't realize that if you have determination, you can accomplish so much. And
it's so true.
It's not a matter of what you've accomplished. It's a time that when you're down and how you raise yourself back up and get going again. And I think that's the most important thing. You did not settle for anything. You knew what you wanted out of life, and you just went for it. And so it speaks volumes. And that brings us to the idea of now talking about enjoying reading your book. What inspired you to write Single Mother, the New Father?
Wow. Ben, thank you. I'm glad that you're enjoying it, Johnny. Actually, the experience that I had raising my son as a single mom was very unique. It was a very unique one. And we noticed, and when I say we, I'm speaking about my son and I,
sure.
We noticed that a lot of what we did, it was just us. And I was usually the only mom present in a lot of the activities that he was involved in, namely sports, for example. So volume one, as you can see, is about sports. And it is a series of books, Johnny, and the reason for that is because there's so much, as you can imagine. Sean is 23 years old now. There's so much that went into our experience And
right.
So much involved. So I broke those things down into different volumes so that they wouldn't be too over. It wouldn't be too overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you could pick it up and really get solid nuggets out of it and real life to-dos. What can I do next if I'm raising
right.
a child and I need to be involved and so forth. And actually my son was the one who said, you know, Mom, the things that you did and the things that we did and accomplished are phenomenal. My son said this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you should really write a book. And he was with one of his buddies at the time. And I just looked at them and I said, well, you guys are, you know, haha, that's great. You know I want to write a book. I've wanted to write a book for years. But he said, no, really. You should really write a book because most of my friends are always asking me, how did you do this and how did you guys do that?
Right.
You know, so he said, you should write a book. And I said, you know what? You're probably right. I think we should. Let's start with that one because there's so many
right.
books I want to write. We'll start with that one because so many single moms have asked me over and over, how did you get your son into the top public high school in New York,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of
mm-hmm.
the hardest schools, Stuyvesant High School, you have to test
mm-hmm.
in there, you know, how were you able to do that? And particularly with African-American young men,
sure.
the statistics are so poor for
mm-hmm.
graduating. The graduation rate in New York is about 28% here. So
mm-hmm.
he's a phenomenon, if you will, just getting through high school, but getting through one of the top high schools, getting in to one of the top high schools was very unique. So people always asked, what was your formula?
Right.
How did you do it? And one of the things that got us there was really sports.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. That was one of the things that got us there. So that's what inspired me to start there and really break down all of the benefits of the sports environment for my son and many of the other young boys that were out there playing sports, not just tennis, which happens
right.
to be our sport, but any sport. And the relationship that Sean and I were able to develop as a result of my participation and my involvement and all of the other benefits that he received, and he talks about them in the book as well, all of that is so powerful and such an important lesson for single moms that I just really wanted to document it. And Sean wanted to make sure that I did, and he participated in the documentation of it, which was really a treat for both of us.
I believe so. And what's interesting about it also is that I want to follow up with this question we have from the chat room. How did you balance motherhood with the high anxiety of law school? Because with all this thing going on, you were also doing a lot of different things, of course, being a mother and everything else. So how do you actually balance all that out?
It was tough. And that's, I'm so glad that someone asked that question, because
mm-hmm.
if there's one thing that I want to make sure that I don't send across is the message that I did this and it was easy. It was brutally hard. There were many days that I wondered whether or not I was doing the right thing. You know, should I quit? Should I continue? Should I press forward with this? I had a lot of help. That was one thing. You know, my parents were supportive. Not so much in the beginning stages, though. When I decided that I was going to actually pursue this law school thing, as people
mm-hmm.
said to me, I was challenged, I was ridiculed, I was called all kinds of funny names, you're out of your mind, you're leaving your good-paying nursing job to go do what? go to school, you know, and pay all that money to go to school and move across
right.
the country, because we were living in Los Angeles at the time, and I went to Ohio
mm-hmm.
State. So I literally drove across the country with everything I owned in a truck and sent a moving van and my 3-year-old son, and we went to law school, and it was very difficult. And there were a few other parents there, only
mm-hmm.
one other single mom, but there were a couple of other men that were there who were they were parents, not single.
Mm-hmm.
But those of us who were single parents, really, we really did fight. We had to fight tooth and nail, because you get up early in the morning, you've got classes that will keep you all day, and you have to spend a tremendous amount of time in the library, and then you have to be concerned about your child. And Sean was 3, so he was in pre-K at that time.
Right.
So I would drop him off in the morning with his lunch and bags and everything and have him in the after-school program. Then I would leave class, go and pick him up. And many times I would have him in the library with me. you know, we would go, he would be able to do his little homework, I would be able to study mine a little bit, then we'd spend time together, cook dinner, so forth.
Well, let me follow up with one question that I wanted to find out, because I know in your book you mentioned about you've learned so much about life on the tennis court. You have a wonderful relationship with your dad. Please share some of those lessons that you've learned.
One of them is confidence. The actual, the participation in the sport as well, and sports in general, it lends itself to building confidence, because in order to perform and participate in tournaments and competing against other individuals, you have to have a certain level of confidence in yourself. You can't be timid. You can't be afraid. Because one of the other secrets that I talk about in the book, the bonus secret, is that people will talk all kinds of trash to you.
Yeah, I read about that.
They will intimidate you and tell you that you're not good and this and that. And, you know, your opponents generally. And you really have to be able to stand strong and say, not only am I ready because I put in the work, but I am confident that I can accomplish whatever it is I set my mind to. And you, in saying that, not only when you're competing in a tournament, but also saying that when you're on your way out to practice. So confidence was one that's a huge thing. And another thing that one of the secrets and one of the benefits is being able to conduct yourself in various environments, especially for a young child, because they will have to interact with adults. They have to be able to deal with conflict, if you will. Because issues will come up on the playing field whereby somebody's going to yell at you for something that you did. You know, and you can't have soft skin. You have to be able to deal with the conflict. And you may have some conflicting issues going on with some of your teammates or your opponent. There may be a point that you need to dispute. There may be something that goes on with the referee. You have to be able to deal respectfully with your colleagues on the field and also with the adults that are there. So it was huge for Sean. You know, a timid, you can see a timid child transform right before your eyes if they have support, and that was the other thing. If the child has someone who he can run these things off of, who's in his corner always, and he knows that he's not out there alone, and that was one of the primary reasons, Johnny, that brings me right to the point, where the single moms often brought their sons in particular to the sports ground, and they dropped them off and they left. So the boys were out there to figure things out and fend for themselves.
Right.
Now the boys
very,
that had...
Very, very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true what you just said. And to me, that brought a question about how important was it for you to be involved with Sean's life from a father's perspective? Because, I mean, it's obviously a different role that you have to play from a mother and then a father's perspective. And, of course, follow up with that is, where was his father? I know that in the book he mentioned a little bit about he was involved in some ways. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, first of all, it was critically important. Critically important to be involved in his sports activities. And as I mentioned to you, so the moms that would drop their boys off and leave, they're out there alone. But the boys that had fathers, the fathers were out there with them.
Right.
And the fathers would break their, you know, their performance down after the game. They'd be able to talk to them. And because they were able to witness exactly what the child was doing out there, they knew what to talk about as opposed to just saying, well, honey, how was practice? You know, and getting it from the child's perspective. If it was a bad practice, but you know how boys are, they're like, you know, and then they go in their room. You know, and if you're, if you're out there and you see it, you see the fight, you see them fall, you see them do well or you see them do poorly, you can talk about it in a way that you can't if you weren't there. So for the men, this is something that men are accustomed to doing because they played sports usually themselves. So they know what the child is feeling. They know what it was like, and they are participants, and they can, you know, they can just get right into that conversation that a lot of times women are left out of, and we don't have to be. And that's why it was so important for me. I was just blessed that I was a tennis player. So I knew the sport, loved the sport, and, you know, wanted to be very heavily involved, and I practiced with him. I would go out there and hit balls with him. I would run the track with him, you know, as I talked about in the book. It was really key. Now, you asked where his dad was. Sean's dad is involved in his life. It's not like he never talks to him or anything like that. It's not one of those situations where, you know, he was born and his father disappeared. His dad and I were married, and we divorced when he turned 3 years old. But his father was living in another state. And then he did relocate to New York for a time while Sean was playing. But, you know, if he's doing an every other weekend maybe or whatever it is, he's not there for the every day. And he's not, you know, and for whatever reasons, he was not out there with the sport. And as you know, a sport requires more than an every other weekend involvement. You're there 2, 3, 4 nights out of the week and on the weekend. So, you know, if I wasn't there, he was alone.
Right.
If I wasn't there, he was by himself. And I saw that the other parents, the other fathers, were always there and very involved. And I said, there's no way that my son will be out here and not have the benefit of a parent here to support him. So I was always there.
One of the things that your son had mentioned, which is very interesting, and I think encompass on the point, you never outsource motherly love or fatherly love, which is unconditional love. And what he mentioned here, is, and I want to read this briefly, regardless of the type of coach I had, Mom had one rule of thumb. She would never expect or allow any coach to be more committed or involved in my sport career or my life than she was. And I thought that was wonderfully done because people don't realize it sometimes. We may not be up all the time, but when it's all said and done, you cannot outsource parenthood.
You can't do it. And, you know, it's so funny that you picked that mm-hmm. quote of Sean's to read because when I read that, it brought tears to my eyes. And even just when you read it just now, I could feel myself choking up just a little bit. So, you know, I did not do that because you just can't. You just can't because mm-hmm. no one is going to do it like you do it. And even still, even if someone else is stepping in, it's not like having your mom or your dad there. It's just not like having someone who's right there for you all the time, showing you love, support, appreciation, and dedicating their time to what's mm-hmm. important mm-hmm. to you. And you never, you know, somebody else is just not going to give that to your child the way that you can. And the support that they feel gives them the confidence and the, you know, the chutzpah, if you will,
right.
to perform on a different level. And, you know, I monitored the coaches. I did. I monitored them, mm-hmm. and I'd question them as well. And, well, how come Sean's not playing with the advanced players? He's got the skills. You know, why isn't he out there? Why hasn't he moved up yet? You said that he'd be working at this level. If he's not there, then what does he need to accomplish in order to get there? And a lot of times the answer would be, oh, you know what, we forgot about that, Ms. Williams. Ms. Williams, you know, we were just balancing the numbers, but we'll make sure that he gets there the next week. And if I wasn't there the next week, it might not happen. But because I'm sitting right there, they're like, oh, you know what? She's definitely going to say something. Let's move him over to the next level, like we said. And if he got there and he wasn't performing as well as he should, then I would question that too. You know, are you sure mm-hmm, he's in the mm-hmm. right level, you know? Or if he's not performing, then what's the problem? What do you see as the problem? And what do I need to do? So, and then many times there would just be some frustration on his part or he'd feel like he was outplayed. And I would have people, as I mentioned in the book, I'd have people talk to him because it does. It takes a village. You know, you still have to have support. And I still really think that whether you're a single mom or a single dad, that the child has got to have the influence of the opposite gender, the same gender that they are. So as a young man, it was really important for me to make sure that Sean had examples of other men to look at, positive influences of other men to look at and communicate with. So if he had questions or issues or just wanted to know how to conduct himself, that they were readily available for him and people that he could talk to. But I wanted to know what their philosophy was. I wasn't just going to go drop him in somebody's lap, you know.
Very true. You did a wonderful job, though, with secret number 4, where you mentioned here about getting into the game. That's very, very important, and people don't realize that. How do you connect with the child? And the way you connect it, learn the language, as you had mentioned in the book. Get involved with the practices, like you had mentioned, because if not, there's a disconnect. You don't know what's going on.
That's
and
right.
And I think ultimately, when it's all said and done, you kind of wrapped it up nicely. Communicate, communicate, communicate. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, gosh, that was so important. And I don't think that for opposite gender in particular, as a mom communicating with a young man, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Everybody assumes, you know, hands down, we say that's true.
Right.
Guys communicate differently than women do. That's just fact. Everybody accepts that. But do we look at it when we're thinking about mother and child? Does your son communicate differently than you do? I am going to go on record and say absolutely they do. They communicate differently just because of the age differences, the generational differences.
Right.
You know, the lingo is just different.
Right.
And then you have the gender differences, and there's a difference in communication. So I felt that it was really important to learn as much as I possibly could about how men communicate, and in particular young men communicate, so that I would be able to communicate with my son on a level that would, you know, would not let him shut down. And I wouldn't shut down out of frustration because we're just talking in different spaces. And the fact that I was so engaged in the sport gave us more and more opportunities to communicate about things other than just what's going on in the house or what's happening at school or, you know, just things that are traditionally mom, pop, son, daughter communication. So we would talk about sports, and I would know the language. I was interested. You know, I wasn't faking it. I could play. You know, and we would talk about that. We'd talk about it on the way home. And then as we talked about that, then, of course, things that happened while he was out there would come up. And then we'd go to school. We'd talk about that because he played tennis for, you know, his high school tennis team. And just everything came up. And the most important part of communication, really, to me, is listening. So really being tuned in and listening to what he's saying, watching the body language, watching the facial expressions, the gestures, and so forth. So not only did I hear what he was saying, but I could see how it would impact him on a core level. Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, on the humorous side, one of the secrets that you mentioned, which is kind of interesting, secret number two, don't
My
date
favorite.
The coach.
Say it again,
about
Johnny.
That for a minute.
Yeah, don't date the coach. Don't date the coach. It can be detrimental both for you and your child. It's so true. It's so true. I found that out a couple of different ways. I watched it happen, and, you know, I dated a couple of guys out there in the park.
Mm-hmm.
So
I
realized that it just wasn't a good thing. It wasn't a good thing because it starts to impact your child's world as you bring relationship drama, sometimes, if you will, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you bring your relationship drama into the sports environment, and it just makes for a very uncomfortable situation for both you and the child. And you don't want the relationship now to impact your son's coaching.
Right.
If the coach is coaching the child and then he's dating you, you guys break up, and then what happens to your kid? You know, and what happens to you if he continues to coach the child, and then you have to look at this guy you can't stand? You know, and then try to negotiate, you know, coaching and stuff, and it's just not a good thing.
Oh, I understand that. I thought it was really funny and humorous and just kind of something that we don't sometimes realize we do silly things. And then another one, of course, secret number nine, heels sink in the mud.
I'm going to tell you something. I was out with a girlfriend of mine just last week, and I hope she's listening. Stacey, if you're listening, you'll know what I'm talking about. We were out on the football field because her sons now play football, so I was supporting them and also doing some filming out there because I'm going to have the coach on my television show. And while we were out there, we saw some ladies out there with like 3-4, you know, the high heels now are even higher than they've ever been. And I saw some ladies trying to walk through the mud with like 6-7-inch heels on. And it's just funny. You know, what you wear out to a sporting event, you know, just appropriately dress. It just makes sense to dress appropriately. And it kind of ties in with the secret number two, don't date the coach, because, you know, single mom sometimes, or not even single moms necessarily, just sometimes
right.
you see women out in sports events outside freezing their tush off with, you know, mini skirts and all kinds of stuff, and it's just like, okay, come on, you know, get some jeans, you know, get some appropriate clothing on so that the kids are not making comments about you that embarrass your child, you know?
Right.
That's the most important thing, because the kids talk and they laugh
mm-hmm.
and they have all mm-hmm. kinds of comments, and they will say it about women, the moms. They
right,
do.
Right.
So, okay. Just my take on the issue.
Let us talk about secret number 5, head coach mom. I thought that was very, very interesting, and people don't realize that there are many, many roles involved within that job. So, tell us some of the roles that you champion, so to speak.
You're everything. As the head coach, just think about what a head coach does. You know, Phil Jackson, as
mm-hmm.
head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. And you think about what he does. Every single thing is under his surveillance. He has to have his eye on everything and make sure that all those things are operating so that his team and his players can affect the game to the best of their ability, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you want to make sure for your child that you are organizing and in charge of every single thing, even if you're delegating, if you will, some things to other people, like the actual coaching and the training and so forth. But you are the nutritionist, because no one can play a sport, and even if you're not talking about sports, if you're talking about academics, you have to eat properly, you have to get enough rest. You have to exercise. You have to make sure that your body is in the best possible shape that it can possibly be in order to affect the sport and everything else that you do. So that means that you have to oversee all of those things. Your child is going to need equipment. In our case, it was tennis rackets. So he had to have the accurate racket size, the grip size, make sure that his strings were in the you know, had the proper pressure so that when he's hitting the
mm-hmm.
balls and so forth, it's not impacting his wrist. He might need wristbands. He might need knee, you know, something for his knee if something is hurting. Every single thing, the clothing, the jackets, the shoes, the hats, everything, you name it, that's up to you. And
right.
so, you know, when you're a married parent, you have two people doing these things. So you have one person cooking and you have the other person going to, you know, the Modell's or whatever sporting goods store that you go to, you know, to buy the equipment. You make sure that the bags, you know, they've got to have the tennis bags, they've got to have balls, sometimes ball machines,
mm-hmm.
you name it. You have to be on top of all of that. And then there's injury. So you've got to be nurse. You've got to be, you know, physical therapist. You've got to be therapist also, because, you know, a lot about sports is mental, you know,
right.
with confidence. So you've got to be on your game. And if you're not on your game, if you're not bringing your game, A game, to the table, then how can you help your child? Can't do it.
Very much so. Sean picked actually secret number 7 as the most important one. And secret number 7 is actually what it says here, is that it's all in his head. Share with us the reason behind that.
Every single aspect of our lives is really affected by our thoughts. Everything that you do, every action that you take, everything that you accomplish, everything you say is a thought first. So if what's going on in your head is not properly directed towards your goals, your aspirations, if it is not encouraging you to go there, inspiring you to go there, then you can't accomplish it. If you don't think you'll win, you won't win. If you don't think you'll be successful, you won't be successful. It really is all in your head, and everything starts there. So, you know, if you think that you're going to fail an exam, you're going to fail the exam likely, or you won't do as well as possible because you won't even really apply yourself. And as you
right.
begin to, you know, the Bible says, as a man speaks, so is he. You know, life and death is in the power of the tongue. And the what you speak is usually as a result of what you're thinking. Not usually, that's where it comes from. So
mm-hmm.
it really is all in your head. So as you are working with your children, as I was working with Sean, the first thing that we had to make sure that we did was evaluate what is the conversation he's having in his head and make sure that the conversation is consistent with his goals and his aspirations. And so as we started there, we could see changes drastically taking place. in everything, you know, sports, academics, you know, relationships, work, everything that he was doing, even now today. So a lot of what we did do, not just what you see in the book, but in the books to come, we talk about how we really worked on the conversation that he was having in his head. And as parents have to know, and I had to learn this, that the conversation that he's having in his head is largely going to be a result of the conversation that I'm having in my head.
Right, right.
You know, not just about him, but about myself, because our children become who we are.
Well, you actually put out the roadmap for him in some ways. Now, you have a choice. You can always be the driver, or you can navigate. And I think you played a wonderful job of navigating your son's success in his life.
Thank you very much, Johnny.
I mean, it's wonderful, I believe. Isn't he a recent graduate of Carnegie Mellon?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so congratulations for that. And
Thank you so much. It speaks volume
for what you have done. And also, what I'm looking at, the juggling act, you have your professional career, and you're looking at your family life, obviously, and your own personal life, but somehow you're able to balance it. Were there any point in that array of time that you felt there's a caution flag out there? I know you didn't bail out, but were there a time that you had a caution flag and say, wait a minute now, something is wrong here?
Meaning that something is wrong.
That you need to change something, and that, you know, are you living your full life? Because a lot of times we're looking at, you know, oh, you're living your son's life or your family life. Are you living your life?
Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the days that I really wondered about that was when he left for college. And, you know, that empty nest syndrome is a very real, tangible thing.
Right.
And you think about it, and I have an only, you know, I have one child. So at the time that he was leaving for college, I had to really reevaluate and say, you know, now who are you really? Are you are you you or were you him? You know, and I tell you, it was something that I really had to struggle with for a little while. And fortunately, you know, even though it took me a couple of months to really kind of gather myself together after he left and readjust, I recognized that it wasn't that I was living his life, but that I was just sad that he was gone. You know, I really missed him. He's a great young man. He's a tremendous help to me and so forth. So I just really missed him. And to now reevaluate how I'm going to structure my day and what I'm going to do and so forth. But when I looked at that, I recognized that, no, I wasn't living his life. I was living my life, and the reason that I know that is because he felt very comfortable going on to fulfill the dreams that he has for himself. Now, if I wasn't also living my life, I would be talking a talk and not walking, you know.
The walk, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I looked at that, and I said, okay, great. I have been doing much of what I wanted to do, and now I can really reinvest my time into some of the other goals and dreams and aspirations that I've had that I've always wanted to accomplish. Now I have more time to do that. So I had to make sure that I did use that time wisely and continue to grow, because if I stop, then, you know, again, our children become who we are. So if I'm telling him, listen, you can accomplish whatever it is that you want to accomplish, and if I still have dreams of becoming an author and becoming a speaker and so on and so forth, and really helping other people to overcome obstacles and things like that, then I need to keep moving in that direction. I was doing it, yes, I have my television program and so forth that I've been working on now for 6 years. If I don't continue, then he'll say, well, wait a minute, how come you're not doing all the things that you told me to do? So I continue to take workshops, and that's where I met you, you know, thank God. Continue to do workshops, continue to grow, continue to read, and continue to prosper and move towards the ultimate goals and dreams that I have. And that's why he's continuing to do the same thing, and I'm just so proud of him.
Wonderful. It's a great story. Let's go back to a couple of secrets that I want to address. Secrets number 11 and number 12, They have a serious tone to them, but they are very important nonetheless, because in light of the recent incident involving Reggie Bush and the Heisman Trophy, of course, Please give us your take on these secrets, because I think these are the things sometimes, whether you're a parent or not, we miss the point.
Well, sure. The scholarship issues and the legal issues around the sports environment. Now, one of the things that I just wanted to make sure I'm clear about is the fact that this book, although it's talking about sports, I'm really talking and addressing parents as in the area of amateur sports. And this book is not necessarily for anyone who's looking for professional sports. I'm talking about Little League Baseball, you know,
well, you
got to
get started somewhere.
Started somewhere. And those two chapters are to address the issue of going further in the event that you do want to go further. Because if you followed everything that we talked about earlier on, your child is going to have a successful sports career. And whether they decide to play in high school or not, it's wonderful to have laid the foundation because you get all the other benefits that we talked about earlier on in the interview. But with these two chapters, I talk about the fact that, well, hey, you might want to go further, particularly for single moms. If you need some support with paying for college tuition, guess what? You have, it's right there for you. A lot of children are going to college on sports scholarships, girls and boys. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to take advantage of that or you feel like you'd like to take an advantage of that, I think it's a phenomenal thing to do. However, there are rules involved, and that's why I wrote those chapters, to say, listen, there are laws, actually, and rules and policies and procedures that you must be aware of so that in violation of them, you can ruin your child's sports career or delay it significantly. And LeBron James, I think, is one also who experienced some of that. So those are that's the reason why I wrote that. And also, you know, to prepare your child to be selected for scholarship and for monies to go to college, there are some things that you have to have done in preparation for that long before they start to fill out that first application. So for us, on our example, I am actually going on record to show my mistakes, what I did wrong. And had I done those things differently, Sean would have been able to go to one of the D1, D2 schools for tennis because he wanted to. And because I didn't have the information in advance to have him prepared with a regional ranking, national ranking, he wasn't able to be drafted to one of those schools. Mm-hmm. You know, so I really talked to moms in particular about that. Dads also, because just because you're a man doesn't mean that you necessarily know or have that information. Sometimes it's easier to get because people just talk about it a lot in the sports environment. But for moms, you know, a lot of times we're not familiar with the, you know, NCAA rules. We're not familiar with the perks and so forth that coaches will try to give our kids as a result of trying to draft them for their college teams and so forth. We're not familiar with the fact that people will try to court us to convince us, you know. And if,
when they are out for their interest, not for your child's interest.
Exactly. And if you don't know those things, you can really get yourself in a pickle. So that's why I wrote those, made sure I put those chapters in there.
What advice do you have for moms who do not have a son, or any child that is, who is not into sports? How can your secrets help them?
Well, and I'm glad you asked that question. That is an excellent question, because I've had many moms say, listen, you know, my son's just not athletically inclined. My daughter just really doesn't, she's not interested in sports. She likes to dance or she likes to sing and something like that, and she's just not going to get involved in sports. And I say to those moms that, listen, this and dads too, that the book, because it's directed towards sports, is not exclusive, because I'm not saying that every child needs to be involved in a sport or else forget their life, you know, or you can't have a great relationship with them and so forth. But what I do in that book is I break down all of the benefits of being involved in your child's activities. So whether that activity happens to be chess, then get in the game and get the game into you. Find out how to move a pawn. You know how a knight and a rook moves. Know a chessboard. Go to the tournaments. Get online and get involved in those, you know, the chess games online. And learn the game yourself and also be involved in the coaches. You can't leave your child over with the chess coach. And they're going to need coaches no matter what. And guess what? When you get your child a coach for chess, don't date the coach. It's all applicable.
You don't want to have a checkmate move, huh?
That's right. That's right. It's all applicable, you know, and there are scholarships for chess, too. You, and I'm sure that there are rules and regulations around that. And what school do you go to? Which school do you pick? How do you get your child prepared? There are regional rankings for chess, international rankings for chess. You know, so there are all kinds of things. And singing and dance and so forth. There's so much more beyond our communities that are right in our faces that a lot of times we are not familiar with because we don't have those conversations and we don't have the village and we don't, you know, seek the information out. And it's because we're not as involved. We didn't get in the game and get the game into us. And if our children are involved, we can't leave it up to them to figure all those things out. It's just beyond their pay grade. So as a parent, whatever it is that your child is involved in, you can get a lot of the information and benefits from this book and apply it to whatever it is that you're doing. I have a good girlfriend, as a matter of fact, Sharon. She's one of my dearest friends. And she read the book. She's a married mom with two daughters. And she was telling me that the section on communication is one that she, you know, often pays attention to and applies and actually, you know, has conversations with another friend of ours, Shirley, about and, you know, and how they communicate with their girls and so forth. So it's applicable, I think, across the board. It was for me as well.
Very much so. The other thing, what people need to understand also as parents, don't be intimidated because you have no idea. And you brought up chess, for example. I think not many people out there play a lot of chess. They may play checkers or whatever that is, or heck, I mean, Monopoly.
Absolutely.
I think don't get intimidated by that because it gives you an opportunity to learn something new. And you have to look above and beyond the situation whereby this gives you an opportunity to bond with your child.
Right.
And what more could you do? Because obviously they're not going to go into your world.
Right.
And the easiest way to do is to step into their world. And you don't have to be an expert, but just need to know what's involved. And be there. I think ultimately when it's all said and done, your book talked a lot about, and what Sean talked about, it's all the mental deal. And if the parents are in there for the mental support, the sounding board, the cheerleader when needed to be, that's all they want.
That's right. That's absolutely true.
Because you have all the other coaches to teach everything else.
That's right. That's
and so sometimes we miss the point. We're thinking that we have to be an expert in something, and most of the time we don't need to be. How has writing the book impacted you personally?
Oh my gosh, it was a phenomenal accomplishment for me. Just in one, getting it done and being able to talk to other people about things that I never really articulated. You know, sometimes we have so much in us and we've been through so much that you don't talk about on a daily basis. You know, when do you really sit down and talk about the fact that you dated, you know, somebody's coach? And, you know what I mean? And not only that, but it's really already begun to help a lot of people. And I've had men and women alike read it and like you and enjoy it and see some things in there that maybe they never thought about. Single dads have been reading the book and saying, "My goodness, I really didn't think about that." Or I've seen that happen to some women, and you know, I want to give this to them too and have them read it. I've had some guys buy it and read it with their girlfriends. So
yeah.
It's been very rewarding for me in that sense, and also brings up for me a lot of other information that I want to be able to document so that I can help parents just along the way. And the other real thing that I wanted to mention real quickly, just going back to what you said about not having to be an expert in everything that our children do, I also wanted to mention that I address parents with disabilities in the book as well, because don't feel as though, you know, because you're unable to walk or because you're unable to throw a ball or you have some kind of infirmity that prevents you from even being out there with your child, that you can't participate, because showing up and being present doesn't necessarily mean that you have to actually physically play the sport.
Right.
You know, you
right.
can be there with them. You can send a text message if you happen to be in the hospital or whatever it is, and you can just still show them the support that they need by taking an interest in what they're doing and communicating with them about that and just participating and letting them know how much you love them and love what they're working towards.
There's no handicap in unconditional love.
That's right. I love that. I love
it's true.
That, Johnny.
People don't realize
yeah.
that. But there's no
that's
handicap in unconditional love. And so that's all you need. You're ready to go. Whatever
yes,
it takes,
right.
you know, you're ready to go. Whatever situation, you're ready to apply yourself. Well, what would you like your readers to gain from reading your wonderful book?
I really would love for them to gain a relationship on the deepest level possible with their children. Just looking at a different perspective from what they're already doing, because most likely most parents are already very involved, you know, and love their kids dearly. But this will just give you another idea and another concept and perspective about how you can apply the skills that I talk about here and the concepts that Sean and I talk about both in the book to help really take your relationship to another level. And the other thing that I really wanted parents to, anybody reading the book, this is not just parents, anyone who reads the book, I just really wanted them to get a picture of what single moms and single parents have to do, all that they have to do to manage a household and a family on their own, and for them to understand that they can be part of the village that helps raise the child of a single parent, because we need so much to have the support of our community and our friends and so forth. And if they get a picture of what we're going through, they know that, hey, if I just give her a call and say, do you need a ride? Did your son need a ride to, you know, a game? I'm going. My, you know, I'm taking some other kids or whatever. If they can just support single parents and really help to foster the community around single-parent families, that it can make a huge difference for the 13-some-odd million single parents in this country.
Look at me. It took 9 moms to get me straightened out, so I can understand that.
I love that story, Johnny. I love that story. You have 9 moms. That's amazing. And you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It, you know, everybody plays a different role. And it can be overwhelming sometimes for whether you're a single dad or a single mom to play every single role. And if you have somebody that can be your rearview mirror, you know, that can give you a different perspective of what you're doing and support you, you know, I can run to the supermarket. I'm going to the supermarket. Do you need anything? Something as simple as that.
Right.
You know, can make a huge difference. So that's what I'd like everybody reading the book to get from it.
Where can someone buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Oh, sure. My website is Kathleen with a C, KathleenWilliams.com. And you can purchase my book at KathleenWilliams.com or Amazon.com. BarnesandNoble.com carries it. And you can write to me directly at Kathleen, again with a C, Kathleen at KathleenWilliams.com.
Wonderful. We're coming towards the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Love yourself. Know who you are. Be true to yourself. And in spirit and in truth, represent yourself to the world and enjoy, absolutely enjoy your life.
That's wonderful. That's just beautiful. Very simple, direct to the point. When you look back in your life, now that you had the opportunity to, from a Monday morning quarterbacking, so to speak, were there things that you wanted to change? If you had the chance to go back, would you have changed certain things?
Huh. Well, you know, a lot of people, I've done this too. I'd say if I had to go back, I wouldn't change anything because then I wouldn't be where I am today, and I'm very happy with where I am today. But I won't do that. I don't know that I can offer that if there was something different that I would change, it would be in those chapters about the scholarship and the rankings and so forth. I really think that that's what I would have if I could go back and say, okay, I knew that if I could do this national ranking and so forth, I could change the course of his college careers and so forth. I wouldn't have a problem with if we did it the same way and we ended up in the same place where we are right now. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But not having had the information, I think, is what was important for me. So I'm excited about the fact that we're here, and the fact that we didn't have it was just meant to be, you know, it was God's way. It was just meant to be so that I could bring that information to other moms. But if there was anything I could change, it would be, you know, really search out more information, having gone forward. But I'm happy with what I accomplished, though. And I'm so happy with what has come.
You accomplished so much. You definitely accomplished so much. Well, Kathleen, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mom's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with me this morning. We had a wonderful guest, and I hope you guys got a lot out of it. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be the founders of Family Food Experts and the Kid Critic Approved Seal, Ellen Briggs and Dr. Sally Bird. Their company is dedicated to providing healthier food solutions for children to eat so that they can become the best they can be. Alan, Sally, and I will be discussing how we can eat God-made food for our God-made bodies. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for a living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Kathleen, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you, Johnny. You have a great day, too.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.